Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Dear friends, we are so sorry about the ads. They are a nightmare in every way, but with your donations, we can get rid of ads someday.
Beautiful, Kevin.
Thanks, Rob.
Bach and Harnick are smiling so
your
big
hearts
right
out.
Now. Friends, yes, we are back with a new plea. Much like those adorable puppets from Avenue Q, we are asking for you to give us your money.
For those of you who have headed over to Patreon to throw a little money our way, we thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts.
Your contributions are the only budget we have for this show, and it provided us a new soundboard and better studio space, so a thank you.
Thank you, and as you know, nothing is more fulfilling than talking to the legends of Broadway and hearing them share their thoughts, wisdom, and talents with all of us. However, it does cost money.
And if you want to help us keep the show going, please head over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com. Search for Behind the Curtain, and you can give as little as a dollar a month. And trust me, that dollar will help us more than you will ever know.
Plus, for certain monetary donations, you will get to pick your favorite thing and have advanced knowledge of our future guests so you can ask the legends your own questions.
Ooh. Or you can simply leave canned goods and an original cast recording of How Now, Dow Jones outside our doors if you don't want to contribute on patreon.com.
Truth. So once again, please head over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com to help us out. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Curtain and make sure to join our Facebook page at Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
And follow us on Instagram at Broadway Curtain Podcast. Plus, you can always listen to our podcasts on Broadway World and Stitcher.
If... What? I like that line reading. Do it again.
And Stitcher.
That's it. If Kevin and I had one wish for all of our fellow artists out there, it is that you may all be so lucky to be in a rehearsal room with today's guest. She is the epitome of what every artist should be. Intelligent, talented, fiercely dedicated to the craft, and treats every opportunity to tell a story, no matter the venue or size of the role, as if it was a precious gift bestowed upon her. Which
true.
It is.
Oh, it is. While she has stacked up countless regional credits, she is best known to Broadway audiences for her appearances in 42nd Street, both times, Crazy for You, Showboat, The Civil War, Mamma Mia, The Drowsy Chaperone, sorry, for which she won a Tony Award, Young Frankenstein, Elf, Baby It's You, Bandstand, and later on this season, The Prom, for which we have a feeling she might get another Tony and might be having a little baby brother.
To tell us what it was like to work with such legends as Jerry Orbach, Charles Strauss, Mike Ockrent, Bobo Lewis, and how she learned never to encore I've Got Rhythm at an audition, here is the one and only Beth Level.
Wow, what an intro.
Yay,
oh
Beth.
My gosh, you were saying something. You lost me at Stitcher?
It's like a platform for podcasts.
Who knew?
I know.
Again, my learning curve. Thank you for the tutorial. Well, I certainly will
once
I figure out what you're talking about. I don't know, you were saying something like the legendary something is here, and I just wanted to go, she couldn't be here today, but her evil twin, Beth Level, is here to misbehave and tell stories.
Lucky us.
Lucky me.
Okay, so let's start. Tell us this I've Got Rhythm story.
Oh, gosh, really? Yes.
Yes, we're going to start there.
So I noticed today if I'm coaching or around the younger children that they have these astonishing books.
They're like 4 inches thick.
Books.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm like, what is this book which you are showing me? And in this book, they have their gifts all notated.
Organized.
Oh, yes. So back in the old days when I moved to New York, I was just pulling it out my pants. Mm-hmm. So I went to dear friends of mine, Leslie Eberhardt and David Levy, and we just started singing tunes. Because I didn't really have an audition song. And they came up with this song. I don't know if you've heard it, called I Got Rhythm.
Rings a bell.
Does it? Anyway, but they did. They notated it. So the chorus, I just like held this C. I'm like, ah, just forever.
And like Johnny One Note.
Like Johnny One Note. And I would probably do a little comedy in it. I don't remember.
Oh, I can't imagine.
What? And it kept getting me work. Because sometimes if you have 36 bars, I would put that in there, or even 18 bars. Well, I was just using it over and over again. And I went to some summer stock audition, and I can't remember the director, but, you know, we had crossed paths. He was very kind. And he's like, hi, Beth, how are you doing? I was like, hi, whatever your name is, I don't remember. It was like, oh, my gosh. You're not going to sing I Got Rhythm, are you? And I went, no. And my imaginary book, no, was like, oh, God, I have nothing else to sell. Note to self, sometimes you can just kill a song. Right. So I now,
that much.
I now have a book.
You do?
Well, sort of. Yes. Just in case.
Right.
Yeah. You know, what songs that I've learned that speak to me that I don't have to memorize. So that was the I Got Rhythm.
Memorization being the key thing for you.
Exactly.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
What's in that book? I'm so curious.
Well, it's kind of like what I started with my 54 Below show.
Oh, yeah.
And now, so that's my book. So if I need to sing something,
it's like, that.
Here's what I know.
Right.
Pick one.
Yes. These are your options.
These three songs are what you have to choose from.
Enjoy yourself.
Good luck.
Where did you grow up?
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh, North Carolina, yes.
How did you discover theater in Raleigh, North Carolina?
Slowly. Really slowly. Yeah. You know, this was back in the 70s and 80s, and I went to high school, and I remember being asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? And there just wasn't the opportunities that there are now to experience theater in Raleigh, North Carolina. Now, oh my gosh, there's so much art and theater and touring companies. But back then, it was just really nothing, and my parents weren't of the mindset to let's search out something. You know, I was just like an oddity. Yeah. So literally my senior year in high school, my dear friend, Jan Lee Herndon, hello, shout out, says, why don't you audition for the spring musical? She's this glorious dancer. Yeah. And I was like, the what? She's like, what? It's a musical. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I kind of knew, but it was Brigadoon.
Oh.
And lo and behold, I auditioned and got the role of Bonnie Jean. And I just remember being, you know, in high school, you rehearse for what? 4 months before you do two shows.
Yeah.
And I just remember, right?
No, we did. We really did.
It's like 2 hours a day.
Yes. So for two performances.
And we knew we were going to tour.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we are touring this in the Southeast. This is so good. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in the room and that light bulb went off. Mm. Like, who are you people and what is this and how in the world do I jump into this pool and stay? But, you know, I didn't know what to do. So I went to Meredith College, and I have a degree in social work counseling.
Okay.
Come in really handy. It's fancy, right?
Well,
really handy.
Is.
Come on. Everybody could use that.
Uh-huh.
And I had a teacher, Linda Bamford, there. So I have a minor in theater from that college because there was no such thing as a major. There is now, of course.
Right.
And I did every piece of theater I could get my hand on. I did an Ionesco at the cafeteria. I did No, No, Nanette. I did Applause.
Which you choreographed.
Which I choreographed. I choreographed Applause, too.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I did. I was the only person who... anyway, yes. She went, you can choreograph. I'm like, sure. Which is essentially storytelling with no dance skills.
Yeah.
So I tried to do
great.
The best I could. Yes. And I had taken 3 years of tap at Betty Kovac School of Dance.
Thanks, Betty.
Thank you so much for my mother making me do that. And then at the end of that, with her pushing and just knowing that there was such a curiosity, a fire in me. It's like, what do I do with this?
Yeah.
My parents are going, just get over it, just get over it. Because they wanted me to, I don't know, eat.
Right.
Eat.
Be a social worker.
Be a social worker,
yes.
Have a family, get married, be quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
But I wasn't happy with that. So I was way too chicken to move to New York. So I immediately segued and went and got my MFA.
Went to grad school.
Went to grad school at University of North Carolina at Greensboro, which was probably two of the best years of my life.
Really?
Okay.
To be immersed in all...
You study theater.
Theater, yeah. I have an MFA in acting and directing because that's all you could do. And after that, I had no excuse. And that I left. I went and got my equity card doing an internship at what is now a defunct Pennsylvania Stage Company in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Where I was born.
Really?
Peggy Sawyer's from.
I know. And then I had my little equity card in hand and got on the bus.
So you were like straight
Peggy
up
Sawyer.
Like Peggy Sawyer, really.
Pretty much.
Except that you weren't from, but you were coming from
no
Allentown.
No dance skills, yes. Yeah. But I thought I had dance skills. That's
but
a different story. Well, I had a tap vocabulary.
Right.
Just I had stayed with the dancing a little longer. It would have made life a little easier back in the day when you went into a room and you had to go to a dance call.
Yeah.
I went to if I might steal the story.
Go.
Oh, when I thought I was still a dancer, there was a huge open call for Cats.
Uh-huh.
And back in the day, I don't know if they still do this anymore. You actually were in the Winter Garden, sitting.
I don't think so.
I don't think it's too expensive.
We love to talk about this. We love hearing stories of auditioning on the stage.
Literally, at the Winter Garden, I was in my leg warmers, maybe a headband. I don't remember.
I hope so.
Oh, I hope so. Mm-hmm. I blanked that day pretty much out. I remember signing up. You would go up in groups of 20 or 30 and learn a piece of the combination.
Was it already running at the time?
It was running.
So you were on the set as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I remember sitting in the back row. I had filled up my card and just watching the real dancers up there. And I must have sat there for an hour trying to get enough courage.
No.
And I'm like, girl, you're going to make a fool of yourself. Do take your leg warmers and that sweatband. And I slowly, trying to be as invisible as I could, stepped out of the theater.
You did, and you ducked
oh,
out.
Oh, there's no way I could have done it. There is absolutely no way. I mean, it's really difficult. I then realized that I'm a singer who moves well, and I do pretty good storytelling.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I'd
don't.
Say so.
I can't. I have no technique whatsoever. So that was this, like, note to self: don't do that. Just don't. You can never be in Cats.
Even though you were in 42nd Street. Twice.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay.
Yes.
Just the facts are facts.
It's and that's a miracle. That first, my first audition, I walked in and again at the theater, and I was so green, and I walked in my pink fuchsia, you know, skirt that my mother had bought me. So, and literally at the Majestic, there was a row of. I'm not sure if it was David Merrick, but I know it was Mark Bramble and Michael Stewart and all of these people, and a ghost lamp still on stage. And I walked in, and thank goodness they made me sing first. And yes, I did think I sang I Got Rhythm.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Oh, my God, maybe that was the first time.
It's the greatest hit.
Yeah, maybe.
It's the greatest
hit. It
is my only hit. And then I read the sides, and I think Michael Stewart liked my comedy so much. And, I can sing a tune.
Right.
And then they asked Gower's assistant, Karen Baker, to come up and show me the Anytime Annie tap break. I remember looking at her feet going, thinking, oh. So I took out my Walkman.
Yeah.
And I taped her feet, making the noise, and I would go flap, shuffle, hop, step. Because, like I said, thank goodness I knew part of the vocabulary, and I did not do a good job. But they gave me a call back,
right.
And it was essentially, if you learn this tap
please
dance,
learn this
please,
dance,
please come back in 5 days.
Yeah.
So I rented, my husband at the time was a tap dancer he was. And so we rented, remember Harlequin Studios?
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The porn shop and the Harlequin.
Oh, yeah, where the Howard Johnsons used to be down
there. Yes, and the stairs are like
where the Fontaine Theater is next to it, yes.
Went up there on that crooked floor.
Old school. And that guy would be like, let me see if I have a room, and open up his big
what a ledger.
Yes. Yeah, like, he would. It was
worked my ass off.
Good
and I came
for
in.
You.
I got it. And I went out on the national tour for 8 months in the role of Anytime Annie, opened up on Broadway.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I moved into it after 8 months and I stayed for 4 years.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I know.
4 years.
4 years. Nothing else better was coming along. It's like I had a job.
Was there early, it was the 80s.
It was the 80s.
Not a lot of big musicals.
Like, I think and plus, during that 4 years, they took the Broadway principals and the ensemble from the bus and truck. Mm-hmm. We met at the Expo in Vancouver, British Columbia, merged the two companies together, and went to Japan and filmed it.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
It's kind of, every once in a while, you'll see this.
Was Leroy? Was Leroy
yes,
in
yes, Leroy yeah. was in it.
He was one of our first interviews way back when.
Leroy was in it. Carol Cook, Jamie Ross.
A lot of it's on YouTube.
Really?
Oh, please. It's all over YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe I watch it every night.
It's illegal, but we're going to post it.
It's so interesting because, you know, typically my big one experience in Japan, the audiences are so respectful.
Yes.
That's the way,
it's kind of very silent until the end.
Right.
So it was a real interesting thing, A, to be in Japan and then doing this show and then them being so appreciative at the end.
Yeah.
We're used to, like, American audiences, like, bah! Be like,
right.
It's like, okay, just keep going.
Yep.
Keep going.
Exactly
push through. Push through.
Did you, was this, how long had you been in New York before you booked this gig?
About a year.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was really lucky.
Yeah.
About a year. I didn't have the skills to be a waiter.
Right.
Yeah. What were you doing to keep money in your pocket?
I worked in the ensemble at the Muni before I did that. I did 3 shows out there. I would do little temp events here and there, and then I got this job pretty quickly. Plus, okay. I had saved some money, so mm-hmm. I didn't have to. And I begged my parents for 1 month. So I was really lucky. I didn't have to financially struggle before I got the first job.
Right.
You know, even at, how old am I, 99 years old, there's still months where I go, we got to sell some jewelry or something. Come on.
Yeah. That doesn't go away.
That's showbiz.
It really doesn't. It just doesn't. Yeah. They're good years. Interesting years.
That's what my tax guy says.
My
tax guy's like, well, some years you're on Broadway, some years it's off Broadway.
There you go.
Very matter of fact.
But it's true. Yeah. It's true.
It is, you know.
Was there anybody else in your family that was artistic like you were?
No.
So where do you think it all
came from? What's wrong with me?
Where did it come from?
I don't know.
Where do you get your sense of humor from?
I don't know. Good night.
Thank you so much for joining us.
She'll be here, but
we're going to go back to Helen's house.
My dad had kind of it was funny, but not funny. I would hear him. He was a salesperson.
Oh.
So I could hear, yes. You know, I could hear that speech he would go into, that banter, mm-hmm. and it was funny. So obviously some of it stuck. Yeah. And he would walk in a room and make everyone feel comfortable because he was funny.
Yeah.
And that must have, like I said, stuck someplace.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So thank you. My grandfather played the violin.
Oh, okay. Huh? So there's some music.
That's it.
Did you play any instruments?
I faked the violin. Oh, I don't know if I ever knew this story. Please. I took violin. You had to take an instrument in fifth and sixth grade. Uh-huh. But reading the music was so difficult for me. I don't know why. It was like math.
Well, it is.
So yeah. I would just memorize it in my ear and repeat it. Which I think now is really encouraged, but
that's
back
really
then,
brilliant,
my
actually.
Teacher caught on, and she put down sheet music, and she said, play it, without me ever hearing it, and I was like, busted.
Oh, my gosh.
It was busted.
Meanwhile, that's a really good ear. I mean, that's a really good ear.
I couldn't play, but,
that's
you know, just I had to hear it a couple of times, and then I could just, like, mimic it, which
But you're like
I wish
that as an actor, too, because we just did a reading, and she was like, I don't really read music, and then I would play her notes, and then, like, literally the second pass, she was like, like, right on.
I mean,
like,
well,
and I was
had,
like, what are you talking about? Of course you read
music.
I had to
compensate. No,
right.
I mean, I could tell.
You know that skill, and you know
right, but I wish I'd known it. Thank you.
It's because you have a good ear. You have a good ear for
But it just means I have to do a lot more homework at night than people that pick up, you know, the people with books and, like, go, the second alto line. So I have to spend 9 years going, second alto.
Yeah, again.
This is the second alto. Toe. But I'll learn it. Give me a month.
Yep, true. Month a day.
When you were growing up, what musicals were you listening to? Or were you not listening at all?
I didn't know musicals really existed.
So what did you listen to?
Lawrence Welk on TV.
Oh, wow.
You know.
I love Lawrence Welk.
Who
it's a
doesn't?
Guilty pleasure.
PBS every night. Every Saturday night.
Every Saturday night. Yeah.
Hee Haw.
Okay.
We had to watch Hee Haw. You know, there was one TV with three stations.
Well,
Ed Sullivan Show.
Of course, every Sunday
And you
night.
Remember every seeing a little bit of something with that going, are these dancers? And then my parents took me, this was life-changing actually, took me to the theater. We didn't hardly ever go to the movies just because my dad worked a lot. We went and saw Music Man with Robert Preston and Shirley Jones. And I remember leaving the theater, you know, while I was sitting there and going into that parade at the end. It was transforming the joy I felt watching that storytelling and them singing. You know, when you could no longer speak, they were singing and then they danced. But I had no idea that how I got here. Yeah. But I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dear Lord.
Oh, my God.
Why did you go to grad school right after undergrad?
Why did I?
Yeah, why?
Because I didn't know what else to do, honestly. I was way too chicken and too broke to move to Manhattan. I was terrified of that, just terrified. Mm. I knew I needed to grow up a little bit more. I needed to learn more about theater. I needed to learn more about myself as an artist, or who I was, what, who is all of this energy. And that 2 years there really, really opened my eyes to a lot of things.
How do you approach a role? Instinct?
Instinct. I always depend on a director to help guide me, but it's pretty instinctual, truthful storytelling, whatever it is, whether it's Drowsy Chaperone or Mama Rose.
Right.
Or Steel Magnolias.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, do you sit down and make notes in the script, or do you just go up there and play?
I go up there and just throw it all up against the wall.
Yeah. Amazing. What do you look
some
for?
Days, some days. Some days it's amazing. Some days I'm like, what do you... Yeah. Beth, can I talk to you, please? Like, oh, sorry. Was that not a good choice? And, you know, the more you do it, the more your instincts, I think... I trust myself not to edit so much anymore.
Oh, wow.
So just, like I said, just throw it out there and see what happens. Sometimes I have really good instincts. Sometimes I need someone to go, how about this? Right. And I go, oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So what to you is the ideal rehearsal process?
A long time. Mm. I love to really spend a lot of time organically blocking and just getting to know who it is, particularly a new show like Prom.
Yeah.
Just finding that voice. But this, I'm so spoiled. Prom is actually written for my voice. So I kind of just have to open my mouth. I'm like, oh my gosh, easy. Bob Martin and Chad Baglin kind of wrote, and Casey wrote for me. So just to step into that outfit, which is so comfortable, is such a joy.
And for our listeners who don't know, what is The Prom and who's your character?
I play Dee Dee Allen, and The Prom is a new original musical.
Original.
Based on an actual story that happened. There was a lesbian couple in Mississippi, but we've changed that to Indiana, who wanted to take her girlfriend to the prom, and the PTA or some version of the PTA caught wind of it and canceled it. That actually had a good ending, but now in the musical version, they've musicalized it by adding four Broadway divas who are kind of struggling with their career, even though my character, Dee Dee Allen, has won 2 Tony Awards, which she may or may not carry with her at all times. Not kidding. And since the show opens on an opening night of a musical that has flopped so horribly that they feel like they're at the end of their rope, and they decide. I'm in the room with Brooke Sashmanskas, Chris Sieber, and Angie Schwartz.
Okay.
Oh, my
so
God.
You,
yes.
They just, we all decide that we need to become political activists. Me, who can't even say, Dee Dee really is my evil twin. Mm-hmm. So we hear about this situation, this girl in Indiana, and we go out there
about this.
To save her. And maybe at the same time we'll get some good press. Well, of course, she saves us, and comedy and heart ensues. It's one of the best things I've ever done. Not me, like, oh, I'm so good, but the show is just beautiful and heartfelt and hilarious and heartfelt and relevant.
Amazing.
And I'm like, let's go. Let's go. This is really special.
November? It opens in November?
It opens in November. We go back into rehearsal in September.
Oh, that's so amazing. But you like that long process.
I do, just to, get in the room, in the oxygen, really find out who she is. And I do like that. And I like it. I like to be in a room, which I'm very lucky to have worked with great directors who can, let me throw everything up against the wall and tell me what the best choice is.
So you like a director who has a very strong eye for editing?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. And one that lets me free at the same time. Mm-hmm. Lets me feel safe enough to throw it up against the wall and then has the good taste to go, don't do that. Yeah. Or do that. Or, you showed me something there. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like to be someone to reinforce my good choices in the room.
So true collaboration.
True, really.
I like it. Some people call it a collaboration. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that very much.
Do you ever want to go back to directing?
No. No. I love directing the acting and the storytelling, but somebody goes about lights or sets, like, boop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just don't have the skills to do that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of enjoying, I've been doing some master classes and coaching, and it is so satisfying.
Yeah.
But don't ask me to put it on stage because I don't care about
that. It's more fun to find the truth of it, but not the whole, all the other bells and whistles.
Well, I don't know it. I don't know how to make the bells and whistles effective. Yeah.
Now, you said when you were at grad school, you went because you wanted to learn more about yourself as an artist. Mm-hmm. So what did you learn after your 2 years?
I learned what kind of type I am because I get... getting cast in the same kind of roles. Not that you can't play something else, but it's like, oh, I'm the funny person who belts, and if you give me a song, I can break your heart.
Yeah.
So just practicing, trusting myself in those roles, you just learn so much.
Yeah.
You just learn so much. And you learn so much when you're in a role and you don't do well. Like, oh, well, I didn't do very well in that one. That didn't feel very good. You just learn a lot about yourself. As I constantly tell my students that I feel like I'm a constant student. Uh-huh. I learn stuff in Prom about myself. You have to. You have to be available to that, or else you just stagnate and don't learn.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still available for
the
learning.
We're artists.
Yes.
Growing.
I want to be a sponge.
It sounds cliche.
It does,
but it's true.
It is true. I have to dance in the prom.
Okay.
Oh, man. Yeah. I was hoping.
I'm definitely not deputy now.
Oh my God. Yes, at the end, Casey has all of us old people, and I say that with the most loving. And Josh Lehman, I meant to say he was in our storytelling. We do hip hop. So that to me is worth the price of admission.
Oh.
But I mean hard.
I can't wait.
It's hard for us old people. In Atlanta, we had to go in a different room.
At the Alliance.
At the Alliance. Mm-hmm. And Casey Hushin, who was Casey Nicholaw's assistant, bless her heart, had to spend so much time in the slow room.
I bet you guys
room.
Are laughing hard, though, in that room with all you clowns.
I was like, okay, wait, that's... What?
Pop and lock and pop it.
What does that mean? But where does this hand go? I don't know what to do with that leg. It was a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But by the end, we could fake it pretty.
Okay.
Gosh darn it. Because, hand gestures and a lot of face.
Yeah.
That way they won't look at that.
That's usually what the dance call
is. Oh, sorry. I just ruined your table.
When you moved up to New York, did you move by yourself?
I did.
Did you know anybody in
New
York? No. Was it your first time in New York City?
I had been with my parents when I was, I think, 15 on a Lions Club International Convention.
Mm-hmm. First Broadway show you ever saw?
I had a choice to see, do you believe this?
I can't wait.
See Angela Lansbury and Mame.
Okay.
Or go to a Yankees game with my dad on the subway. I went to the Yankees game. What was I thinking?
Well, you know, it was,
what was I
it was
thinking?
A different time. It was
so when I went back up in college, I had a college trip, and so the first show I saw, which I hardly remembered because literally we drove on the bus all night long, so we got to the city like 8 a.m. When you're just feeling pretty and fresh.
Yeah.
We saw Grease.
Oh.
But I was on, not kidding, the very last row in the balcony.
Okay.
And the person in front of me had some sort of fatty meat sandwich, like a Reuben or something, and we were really hungry.
Nope.
That's all I remember.
Nope.
It's like, give me that sandwich. Give me that damn sandwich now. And then I saw Pearl Bailey in Hello, Dolly.
Oh, I love
her. Oh, gosh.
I love Pearl Bailey so much.
Me too. And she came out afterwards. I'm not a big, like, wait around and get an autograph, but I had to. And I just stared at her like a creepy girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fascinating. I just remember looking at her and thinking how beautiful she was.
Yeah.
I saw a play. I couldn't tell you what it was.
That's okay.
That's all right. And then I saw Chorus Line. That kind of changed my life as well.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That really, anyway, that, and then, so that was the last time I believe I was up in New York. And then I moved.
Yeah.
Whew.
And like, how did you know what to do?
Well, you know, people, you connect pretty quickly. And,
right.
my,
and, you had
and I had some friends.
Pennsylvania
Stage Company. I had friends
so
up here with that.
Some of the people.
And people that were much more savvy at the New York.
Get but the it trades was, and you do all that.
Think you know, I wasn't scared. I mean, it was like thrilling. What's the worst that can happen?
Right.
I would have an adventure and then go do social work someplace or teach or someplace. But... and I would get that backstage paper, which, of course, you get online now, every Thursday and circle where I was. So it was like, yes, what a plan.
Right.
And I just leapt. I just leapt into the water. And I was lucky.
Yeah. Wow.
Who were some of your mentors when you came to the city?
Bobo Lewis.
So tell us about Bobo Lewis.
I wanted to be her. Hmm. This independent, successful, fabulous woman. She was like... A super feminist, and I just wanted to be around her so I could just steal whatever DNA she could, you know, teach me. Mm. I just really loved her. She taught me a lot about the city and about acting and about being a professional.
How did you two link up?
42nd Street.
Yeah.
42nd Street. She did the tour of 42nd Street. You know, the stories she had.
Yeah.
She was Carol Channing's understudy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh, check that. I think that's right, but
that name, I was... it's names like that I love saying out loud.
No, it's Bibi Osterwald.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wrong. Bibi did it, but she was also one of these strong, powerful, autonomous...
I remember that name.
...successful women that I was like, oh, gosh, fearless.
Right.
Both of them, Bibi Osterwald and Bobo Lewis. Bobo did it in New York. Bibi was on the road. Mm. Oh, I just really loved being around them.
Mm.
I really did. you know, that first, your big job, you're just like, you just love everybody. That company is still really close.
They're still close. You still talk to people from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. We just had a reunion like 3 years ago.
Oh, fun. So she was a mentor for you. Who else did you have? Or was she the primary one?
She was the primary one. But each show you would go into as a, you know, a younger performer, I would always look up to whoever was next. And whoever was going to teach me or who I admired as a performer and try to figure out what are they doing that is so satisfying to me listening as a as a theater goer. Yeah.
Did you have any interactions with either Jerry Orbach or David Merrick?
David Merrick, no. By the time I got to 42nd Street, he had suffered a stroke, so it wasn't quite this, but he was still there. Like when we went to Vancouver, he was in Vancouver.
And
he
his
went
wife,
to
I think, took care of him a lot.
The wife was there.
What's his name? The Asian lady? I forget.
I can't think of her name.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
But yeah, so I didn't really get to know him very well. Jerry Orbach, I did, but only maybe a month with Jerry Orbach. He was so kind, but our paths never crossed that month. But I remember he was just driving that train.
That's
he was driving that 42nd Street train. You know. So that was, I was in the room with him. It was great. Yeah.
How does Crazy for You come into your orbit?
Wow. That luck.
You had a couple auditions for that one.
Seven.
Yeah.
Seven auditions.
Speaking of mentors, you know, Susan Stroman and Mike Ockrent.
Yeah.
Yeah, seven auditions. I came in. Oh, gosh, I hope I didn't sing I Got Rhythm, but I could have. I'm trying to think. Was it before
the really
shaming?
It makes sense that you would sing it for all shows.
Oh, maybe. That's right. Yeah. So maybe I gave myself permission
like,
to.
Bam, I got the perfect song.
And watch what I do with it. And in that room also was Paul Gimignani.
Oh, the great music director.
Oh, I would just hang on his every word. So I went in and I was auditioning for Polly. Got a call back. I mean, seven times, that's a lot. And
that
then I went and down and did Hello Dolly at North Carolina Theater, and then I had to fly back up for another callback. And in that time, I wonder if he remembers this, William Ivey, who's all long, is also from North Carolina.
Yeah, he does, that's right. He goes back for a lot.
We're actually probably related some way from him. You're welcome. He met me at my apartment and wanted to help me look my best for the final callback. We went to Macy's. He, David Lawrence, and I went to Macy's going, try this on. Got a complete outfit. So grateful. Went back to my apartment. David did my hair, my makeup, gotten me in a cap, and I went to the final audition. Didn't get it. Oh, but I look good.
I bet.
But I think Julie Hughes and Hughes Moss.
Yes, Barry Moss.
Were so kind to me and believed in me so much that I remember hearing, whether this is true or not, at the casting roundup or whatever, liking me so much that they kind of created Tess, the role I ended up doing.
I believe that.
It was kind of not, the role really wasn't on the page. So they offered me Tess and to stand by for Jodie Benson.
Right.
And it was like, absolutely. And I was in the room with Stroh and Mike Ockrent. And Harry Groener, and it was lovely. That, wow, to be in a room with that, those smart, creative minds. I remember the first rehearsal down at, 890.
Yeah, the famous Michael Bennett Studios.
Yes, walking in and, you know, me not a dancer, and the role kind of was a dancing role.
It's sort of a
dance show,
yeah.
That's why they made me the dance captain, which is code for dance captain, stand on the side. But I walked in the room, and there were girls standing on pickaxes with guys holding them, thinking, I'm going to be fired. Mm-mm. It was so cute, because I'm not a dancer. There was one point where we're supposed to be kicking the mining pans over our head. Like, I can't get my leg up that high. But I remember Dr. Stroh kind of going down the line going, can you do a split? You do a split. You do a split. And she got to me and was like, you can't do a split, can you? It was like, no, ma'am, I cannot. But I can do one heck of a half split. So if you look at some of the pictures, everybody's leg are split and I'm like in a lunge. With lots of face, but just a lunge.
Mm-hmm.
And she let me embrace that sensible lunge.
Okay, then.
boy, I learned a lot in that show. It was so thrilling. It was my first original show.
Yeah.
And that we got such spectacular reviews.
Yeah.
To the energy around that show is...
It's exciting when you're part of a show like that in the business, too.
Thrilling. It's really thrilling. It's thrilling.
It is.
Let's talk about Mike Ockren for a minute, because we try to always bring him up.
Good.
He left us way too soon.
Way too soon.
What's it like being in a rehearsal?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Room with him. Him as the captain of the ship.
A, he's amazingly smart. B, he leads with kindness.
Mm.
Kindness and humor. And yet all the work still gets done.
Yeah.
I remember our out-of-town tryouts were at the National Theater in Washington. And the day before we went down, they completely threw out Act Two.
Oh.
Which could be a lot of drama.
Yeah.
And it was like, he was so excited about it. He and Ken Ludwig, it's not working. It's not working, darling. So we're going to do a whole new Act Two. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And we would have gone anywhere he asked us to, that team. Mm. And they were right. They fixed Act Two. They threw out this huge, very expensive number. And so to be in the room with him was safe. Mm. He was so smart, and there was a lot of laughs. And, you know, me, if you want to get work out of me, if you want my higher creative self to come in, if you make me feel safe and I laugh, I'll go anywhere you ask me. I will go anywhere you ask me. And he was like that.
Oh, so special.
I know.
Well, thanks for sharing that, because we just love bringing him up.
And I love when I'm down at 42nd Street Studios, you know, there's one rehearsal room dedicated to him.
There is.
Yeah, so I always say hello.
Yeah.
And thank you.
It's an important memory and it's an important legacy that we have to protect.
Exactly.
It is.
Yeah.
We have to protect that.
I was grateful.
How long were you with Crazy for You?
Until I got pregnant.
Oh, okay.
So almost 3 years, 2 years maybe.
Oh, my.
I know. I stick in shows. I was the breadwinner at the time, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're getting paid.
Right.
There's a thought.
To perform.
Hello.
So, that's what we signed up to do originally.
Yep. I mean, so I stayed until I could no longer lay on my stomach in bad news. Go away.
Right.
I'd be like, oh. Or it's like, what's wrong with that chorus girl? Just like rolled out of the car. I'm like, ugh. And then I was planning on going back into the show, you know, after Sam was born. And I got a call from Susan Stroman going, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm 8.5 months pregnant.
Right.
And then she asked me, could I go into Showboat as a replacement for Ellie Mae Shipley. So I went into that about 3 weeks after I'd had a C-section.
Oh my God.
That's right. Work is work.
That's how we do it in
That's
showbiz,
how we do
folks.
It. Opportunity knocking, you know, say I'm busy.
Open the door.
I'm lactating.
Yeah.
Let's get into
that
the room.
That must have been quite an... You're a young mom. I'm at an age in my life where like a lot of my friends have children.
Sure.
And I'm thinking of what a mother goes through. And yet you're performing in a show at night, every night, 8 shows a week. Just must have been a crazy time.
It was a crazy time.
And
it's all
Showboat,
a blur.
Which was not a 1.5-hour musical.
It was not.
Yeah.
It was down at like 4 of 11.
Yeah.
And we were commuting from New Jersey. But there was a lot of us young mothers in that.
Right.
I met my best friend during that show, Anne Van Cleef.
Nice.
And it was the first time I was able to work with Hal Prince.
Right.
Who, you know, it had opened, so he wasn't there that much, but it was thrilling. It was an opportunity. I pay the rent, so I can't turn down work.
Right.
So, and I try to tell my children, particularly Sam, the one that was born right before Showboat, they used to come in and meet me every matinee day, and he spent part of his childhood, his babyhoodness, running up and down the aisles at the Gershwin Theater and on the showboat.
Yeah.
And TJ, my older son, the crew was so nice at the Schubert. They would let him ride the car, let him go up and down, and the hydraulics.
Like the ultimate playground.
Do you know how lucky you are,
you don't even
children?
Know.
You have no idea how many people would really love that opportunity.
What happens after Showboat?
After Showboat is Civil War.
It was. That did happen. That was a musical.
It did, yeah.
Yes, because I remember Sam being that big. Civil War, even though it didn't run that long on Broadway, we went to the Alley Theater.
Yeah.
So we and then we went to New Haven. So it actually turned out to be a chunk of a job that morphed every time we turned around and did it.
The piece itself.
The piece itself. Well, they kept trying to figure out what was it.
Right.
What is this?
And just as a friendly reminder, listeners, this is the Frank Wildhorn Civil War that was basically about the North and the South. And I mean, I saw the tour that happened after the Broadway, so I'm sure it was a completely
different
incarnation.
Very different.
But basically, it was about exactly what the title says.
Exactly.
Essentially.
But initially, it started out, and I think they tried to hold on to that. It was based on a series of letters written by family or people in the war. It was beautiful. It was almost like a concert piece. And Frank and Greg and all
Greg
these...
Greg Boyd, yeah.
Mm-hmm, and I can't think of another person's name. Had all taken these beautiful letters and musicalized them. Right. Story told with these. It's some of the most beautiful music I've ever heard. Like Bill, I don't know if you've ever heard that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Tell my father.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it didn't work. When we got to New York, I think they thought they needed to make it more of an event. So we added fight choreography and uniforms, and ultimately it closed.
And this is when, like, I believe he had three shows running at Jekyll and Hyde. And
we had a whole press event, all of us in costume at the St. James.
That's right. I remember that.
I didn't. Yeah, that's right. Huh. So, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
Did you know it wasn't working when they started adding that stuff? Or
I know you can take kind of a litmus test of the energy in the room, and then when we started getting audience members, it's like something is not working.
You could tell.
Yeah, and by then it was, I don't think they knew how to fix it.
How do you keep yourself positive in that situation?
A, I get paid to do it.
Yeah.
B, I'm always positive in that situation. I just tried to make what I was tasked to do the best I could and as truthful, and I knew that my bit of the story was needed. When we went from, I had a very funny song about a woman who lost her five sons. I'm just kidding. It was like so sad, which was really interesting because that's not the part I'm usually cast in.
I know.
So I remember at one point the creative team, like Frank Wildhorn, and they were all coming up to me going, "You're a hoofer?" They had no idea my past stuff. They hired me based on my audition. So I thought that was valuable to me to actually play the woman who, you know, has to cry throughout an entire song.
Was this your first principal contract, too?
No, Anytime Annie's a principal contract. Oh. And so was Tess. Ha, ha, ha. No, bam, third one. Second original show, which I'm so sorry we never did a cast album. Dang it.
I know.
Wait, well, I was going to say something.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. Yeah.
That's okay. No, please. Oh, please. Oh, I know. So I had this song called Five Boys and sang it at the Alley Theater. So, you know, they start readjusting things. And when I get to New Haven, they neglect to tell me, and we start rehearsal, and we start to sing the song, and it starts. It's like 16 bars, and it stops. I'm like, oh. And they went, oh, Beth, didn't they tell you? We've cut that number. And I remember thinking, my feelings are hurt. I went, can I leave the room for a minute?
Yeah.
And I had to go have my feelings, and I came back in. I was like, okay. Of course, they added it back when we moved to the St. James, but not the whole thing. You know, sometimes, even if you think it's wonderful, if it doesn't serve the author's intention and doesn't do, you know, what the story needs to do, it has to go.
It's gone.
But that was the first time my feelings were ever really hurt like that. I was like, what am I doing wrong? It's like, nothing. We don't need it.
Yeah.
We don't need what that story, that song was doing. That's Civil War.
That's a tough lesson.
It was tough. It was the first time I'd ever heard cast on stage, please. There's a company meeting at half hour. Cast on stage, please.
We never like those words.
We never like those words. Since they're not planned.
And it's always bad.
You know, we look at the numbers. We know.
We look
and see out in the audience, empty seats. We hear what's happening around us in the community. So, and they announced that we were closing that weekend.
Oof. The worst kind of way to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I remember
no
that.
No time to plan. No time. No, I mean, you're just no. like, that's like, the ugly side of show business.
It really is. And you're then like, the next show was, I don't remember. Oh, the revival of 42nd Street.
You did 42nd Street again.
I did.
But in different parts.
I did. I was thankfully too old to tap. So I was cast. I remember thinking, oh, I have to get a job. I remember I was cast to stand by for Mary Testa and Christine Ebersole.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you eventually took over Dorothy Brock.
I did. Yeah. I did. I did it for about a year, maybe a year and a half. And then Shirley Jones came in and they asked me not to come back.
Oh.
In a very kind way. I was at Disney World taking a vacation and I get, you know, you get off the plane, I'm like, message. And it's my agents, just so you'll know, before you see it on the blah, blah, blah. Oh. I was like, you know, it was that time they started needing to bring stars in, not just worker bees.
Exactly when that happened.
Of course.
They were like, they made a big thing out of it.
As they should have. But I remember TJ had like a toy in his hand at Disney World. I was like, put it down. We cannot afford it. Put it down. Let's go. We're having potato chips for lunch.
Don't even look at that. Don't even look at that. Having potato chips for lunch.
It's all right. Let's go.
Bless. How does Drowsy Chaperone come into your orbit?
Oh, after 42nd... there was something...
Lone Star Love.
No, that was way back then. Yeah. The Off-Broadway show.
Giving a shout-out to Lone Star Love. You're on the cast recording, too, but it's just a wild little... I always liked that piece. It was a little weird and funky.
Very singular.
Yes. And it was like a country, folky version of Merry Wives of Windsor, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
That the Red Clay Ramblers did.
Yes.
That North Carolina, famously, you know.
Yeah. And that you did the Off-Broadway. Then they tried to bring it to Broadway from a tour with Randy Quaid, but that was not what you were
playing. You didn't have
Randy
Quaid.
That was a different... an experience that I heard was singular.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
But I just had to give a little shout-out to Lone Star Love that
thank
you did.
You. Yeah. Thank you. Thank
but
you.
But what was the... I think
then Drowsy. I don't remember... I remember having an audition for Drowsy.
Yeah.
This was right after Casey had... won Spamalot, so he...
Right. 2005,
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I went in, and it was one of those...
Did you know him at this point?
I did, because he was in the ensemble of Crazy for You.
Okay, there you go.
And we used to carpool together.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
Back and forth from Jersey.
Yeah.
So they asked me to come in, and Drowsy Chaperone, the role I was... reading for Beatrice Stockwell wasn't one of those roles that's on the page.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to audition for because I don't think the creatives knew who she was, much less us. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of literally brought in whatever your essence was and threw it up against the wall.
Was it a full show at this point? Or
it was.
Can you tell a quick little background of how this piece got started?
Yes, it was initially written as a wedding, a bachelor party gift.
Yeah.
It's a Canadian thing. But it was sort of fully realized up there during and it was so good that they just started refining it. Then it went to another theater up in Toronto, and then I think a big boy theater in Toronto, and that's where the American producers
caught
wind of it.
And the characters are literally like Bob Martin, Janet Vandergraff.
That's their names.
That literally is their names. Yep. Like, I know we know this, but I just, our listeners, it's fun to know that about
it
Drowsy.
It is fun. Isn't that awesome? It's like, hey, this is Janet Vandergraff.
Oh, yeah. Like,
no,
it was
really.
Just a present, and it really was just for fun. But these are really great writers who actually are really good at this.
So these American producers get wind of it, and it ends up being in the Nymph or NAMP.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't remember. And what's the one that has a very strict time limit?
Yeah, NAMP. It was NAMP. It was definitely NAMP.
NAMP.
Yeah.
So that's apparently, intense. Urban legend has it. I was not there. I was not doing it. That it got to the end of the allotted time and the bing, you know, and the audience demanded that it go on.
Yes.
And we love
that. Urban
that.
Legend.
I hope that's true.
I really hope that's true.
Bob Martin, tell me if that's true.
Yeah, please,
I think
Bob.
It is. So I went in and auditioned.
I'm so sorry.
And I brought in. I did not sing I Got Rhythm. I sang something else because I didn't even really know what to sing.
How are you going to make this come off the page? Yeah.
So I just brought in a comedy story that had a comedy song that had kind of a story to it. I love songs that have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
That's if a good they song. Let me all singers
sing.
Should go for.
Yes. Thank you. If they let me sing the whole song, which they did, and I read the sides, which again weren't that much to kind of get into.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, I get a call from Casey, and I. He's like, I'm so sorry you didn't get it. I went, I know. I don't really think I'm the person to bring this to life.
Yeah.
He went, yeah. He went, thank you. You were great, blah, blah, blah. They went, from what I hear, they went to L.A. and auditioned like Hollywood people.
I could see that.
Or like Kit.
Thinking yeah. that those that was the type they wanted.
Tina Louise.
Yeah.
I mean, like those kind of yeah. you know, dames. I thought, oh, that'll work.
Right. I get it. Yeah.
Well, that anyway, still, the you know, wasn't fitting Circle Square. So they came back to New York, held auditions again, and I think they just finally gave up. So I get a call. This is October. I get a call from my agent going, oh, I have an offer for you, which, you know, we love offers. It's yeah. like, no audition.
Offer only.
I'll take it. And he said, it's for the role of Beatrice Stockwell in Drowsy Chaperone. And I corrected him. I said, no, I didn't get that.
Yeah, that rings a bell, but
no,
yeah.
no. So I made him call back. Mm. And he said, yeah, you got it. You leave next week for a three-month stint at the Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles.
When you guys did that. Wow.
And when we got to Los Angeles, that's when it really all came together. It was amazing. We did improv games.
You did?
Yes. Tell us about this rehearsal process. I heard you had to write biographies.
Yep. You know, a lot of people do that, particularly yeah. if you don't know who. And again, such an original piece. Just to root somewhere, it's give you something to hold on to. So we all wrote biographies, which I didn't really. That was my least successful thing because I just didn't know who she was yet.
Right.
I would write a different one now. Mm-hmm. But what really informed me was Casey said, okay, the rest of the week, we're going to start 2 hours every morning with, you know, theater games. I was like, great, okay. Theater games. But that's where I discovered her. There was a game called Hot Seat. And like about the third day into it, we had written our bios, and we'd watched a lot of movies just to so we would all stylistically be on
in
the same
time
page.
In
that
yes.
And the energy and the pacing and stuff like that. So for the hot seat, the person, your character, would come out and sit in a chair, and everyone else, the creative team and the rest of the cast, would throw questions at you as your character. And you just had to respond, listen and respond,
brilliant.
Listen and respond.
Well, how
and
fun.
Boy, does that train you.
Brilliant.
You know, the first two times it was okay. Yeah. The third time I came out, Casey said something like, which he hadn't said before, he meant, ladies and gentlemen, Dame Beatrice Stockwell.
Oh.
And that made me feel something, A.
Of course.
And then I came out, and all of the creatives and the cast stood up and started yelling and cheering. And I did this bow all the way to the floor. And I thought, there she is.
That's her. Bingo.
There she is. And from that point on, then I saw Greg Barnes' costumes. Mm-hmm. And I knew exactly the house I was supposed to live in.
Oh,
amazing.
And then you have this completely collaborative team and, you know, Danny and Sutton and Georgia and Lenny and Jennifer. Just amazing, amazing, yeah. amazing room to be in. It was just, wow.
It sounded like a really magical experience.
It really was. It was really hard. It was terrifying because we had no idea. The show starts with, I hate theater.
Right.
In the dark. And I remember we were doing backup singers, so a whole line of us were sitting on offstage mics the very first preview thinking, we have no earthly idea if this is, we think it's funny and clever and smart. And then we just heard the waves of love and laughter and leaning forward the entire night to eat all of this show that they could.
Yes. I was a member of that audience.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it 4 or 5 times. It was truly, I will go on record saying, is one of the, I would say it is the funniest musical I've ever seen.
It was such an indelible impression in my life.
And yet, you know this because so many people have said, but it was like we went in the audience because I thought, I need to laugh today.
I know.
So you would go, and it was.
I am man in chair.
Really? Yes,
I know.
Exactly.
We all are man in chair.
And that's why. That it was so universal in this period way, and yet it just proves that you can make a creative, original story that is effective, that will resonate, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, you were going to maybe say something?
No, is it?
Oh, I have a question for you. You said if you could redo her bio now.
Yeah, now I would have information about, like, I was kind of making up things about my mother and father. Yeah. Now I know that I pretty much lied my entire life. And maybe I've enhanced, my resume a time or two. And maybe I was just really lucky to absolutely do what I do as opposed to skill and have a blue blood heritage. I do not indeed have that.
So what's it like to find out you're nominated for a Tony Award?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just thinking about that. You know, each year just makes my heart flutter this time of year, knowing what everyone is feeling and the good news, the bad news, the energy. And it was, I tried so hard because Drowsy was the last show that opened that year.
Mm-hmm.
May 2nd or something. Mm-hmm. And literally, it was just crazy land with the press and the press events that we had to do. And I remember just running from event to event. So somebody went, oh, good luck. The nominations come out tomorrow. And I'm like, what? Ah, shit. Really? Okay, just let it go. Yeah. Just let that go. Whatever, you know, que sera, que sera. I really tried to sleep. My husband at the time woke me up the next morning crying.
Aww.
And he said, you've been nominated. And he said, but so is Danny. And we were like, and then the phone starts ringing and it doesn't kind of stop until never.
Well, yeah, and then when you, if you win,
yeah,
and you did, then it's even more so.
Yep.
So what's that like when the name is actually called?
Oh, God.
You can imagine. One of the things, segue with me, to Baby It's You when I was nominated is, yes, A, the show second. Wasn't nominated,
right.
So I could actually sit in my seat and see what I had missed the entire time of Drowsy, right. See the event, like walk a red carpet and enjoy it. But with Drowsy, because your show was nominated, we had to do a number.
Right, which means you don't get, I got ready at the theater
in fancy clothes, did the red carpet, and then went right upstairs and changed into Beatrice Stockwell, makeup. After the Drowsy performance, you run back up there, you get in Beth dress again, and I remember somebody wrangling me. I sat down, it must have been 10 minutes before my category was announced.
And they know, the wrangler knows she got to be in that seat by then. I mean,
they
weren't
worried, it was just me going, okay, so I got my hand. And I, you know, when you just kind of, it's so much and it's so exciting and terrifying. I remember just kind of leaving my body, just kind of leaving it and hoping that if I was lucky enough to win, that I would try to be pseudo-articulate, not curse. Please, dear God, don't fall. And just remember who to thank. And all of this went out the window. We do get a little heads up that, you know, we have 60 seconds or 90, something like that. Yeah. So they said, if you do win and your name's announced, you can spend your time talking to people on the aisle and la, la, la. Or you can get up and do that thing. Yeah. So if you go back and you look at my speech, I like all but like Bob Martin's like, clear! Get out of my way. People trying to talk to me. It's like,
take up my time.
I'm in a long dress. I can't even walk in these shoes. And then you get up and there's not even a podium to hold on. There's this little, you know, acrylic with a mic and I don't remember the rest
entire
of the
world and community. Like,
I don't
at
remember
you.
The rest of the night except that it. Oh, come on! It's it was a once in a lifetime event opportunity that I am just ridiculously grateful for.
Yeah.
How does it change the trajectory of your career after that?
It makes work a little easier. It makes you easier to get in the room.
Because there's like this sentence that goes before your name.
It's pretty much that moniker with the little registered R over it.
Yeah, I mean, but
that opens some doors. Yeah. It really does. People assume that I don't have to audition anymore, which is not true at all.
Right.
And I'm one of these people that don't really mind auditioning, particularly if I don't know the director.
Yeah.
Let's get in the room.
Right.
I want, if you're going to hire me, I want you really to hire me, not just because you know somebody said you have to. Mm-hmm. And see how we work and stuff. Like, this doesn't apply to TV and film. They have no idea who I am. But in the theater world, and like I'm getting ready to go do Mama Rose at the Muni. I didn't have to audition for that. Isn't that nice?
We love those.
For
we
you.
Love those.
Yeah, I didn't have to audition for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't have to audition for prom because I have a relationship.
Yeah.
Right, and same, for Casey from when you did Drowsy.
Exactly.
Right.
And I didn't have to audition for Bandstand. They asked me, which I thought was so lovely.
Really nice.
Everything else I auditioned for.
Let's talk about Bandstand.
Yes.
It was brilliant.
It was beautiful, right?
And it was so well done.
I agree.
And thank God it's been filmed. And now future generations are going to get to enjoy this. Do you enjoy the process of developing new musicals?
Absolutely.
You enjoyed that?
Oh,
you like that?
More than anything.
Yeah.
Because people sometimes say, what's the next thing you want to do? It's like the next original thing that's written.
Yeah.
Right.
You just get to get in there, in the room, and put your DNA all over something.
Mm-hmm.
Right, wrong, whatever. It's just a creative process that it's not a recreative process. So that is thrilling, and it doesn't happen that much. So Bandstand, yay, Drowsy, Prom, Crazy for You, Civil War, all of the things that you're in the room with your own, it's being written around you, for your voice, for your comedy, for your the C that you can hold.
Right.
You know, they all know that that's my power note or whatever.
Yeah.
That's really a privilege.
Has there ever been a new musical that you were involved with that you wish had a longer life than it did or more exposure than it did?
Minsky's.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that was brilliant.
Oh my gosh.
I saw that in LA. That was fantastic.
You did?
Yeah. It was wonderful.
Just the stars weren't aligned for that at the time. I'm doing Home at 54 Below from Minsk. Yeah. I do it in my act. The song is so special to me. Charles Strauss, Susan Birkenhead. I wish that had had another life, because that apparently has been around for decades. Mm-hmm. People trying to, quote unquote, fix it or somehow get people in the seats for a production in New York.
And so for our audiences who might be unfamiliar, what was Minsky's?
Minsky's is about burlesque. Mm. And it's based Minsky's on the nights they raided Minsky's, which is a very famous movie. Mm-hmm. And musicalized and with Charles Strauss, and Susan Birkenhead was writing the lyrics this time. And it's, you know, it's a love story based on the burlesque.
Yeah.
It was fun, and Casey's stuff was fantastic.
Have you recorded Home? Is it on any?
No, you know, okay. You can see it on YouTube everywhere, but no, not officially.
It's a stunning song.
Agreed.
You do a lot of Charles Strauss's work, I feel like.
I do, and Charles and Candor Neb.
Yeah.
I don't know, it speaks to me.
I was just going to ask you, so what do you love about doing Charles's work? Because you've done Miss Hannigan
a number
of times.
Yes, yeah. His melodies are fabulous, and Miss Hannigan's I think that's one of the top three roles I've ever played. You know, when you put on a pair of shoes, it's like,
clear, like, this fits clear, right.
Please.
This
clear, please.
What are
Hold
the
on to your scenery.
What are the other two?
Drowsy. Hold on to your scenery, children. Yeah. Dee Dee Allen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great.
Yeah. That's just off the top of my head.
Is there a bucket list role that you haven't done yet that you want
to? I'm ready to live in Mama Rose again.
Yeah.
I mean, I did that in grad school when I was, you know, 17, which does not count. Okay, maybe I was 19. But I'm ready now to tackle that one.
Boy,
So that's what's happening this summer at the Muni.
And have you performed at the Muni before?
Constantly. It's my favorite place to work besides the Broadway.
Oh, so let me... Oh, how come?
I just love it. I love the theater. It's 11,000 seats. I love the experience. I've worked for a myriad of producers there. Now it's Mike Isaacson. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun, magical place to work, and boy, did it test you.
So, I was going to say, it's 11,000 seat venue. How do you change your performance?
You really
style?
Don't. It's amazing how still the simplicity still reads. You do occasionally have to what we've made a verb called muniizing something. If there's a whole line of people, you have to go, so anyway, you kind of have to raise.
Yes. Pull the old focus.
It's like, where do I look as an 11,500-seat audience? But it's a real lesson as an actor that it's really the same story.
Yeah.
It's really the same acting technique, you know, maybe a little heightened at certain times, but it's really is all the same.
Who's directing it?
Rob Ruggiero.
Oh, well, he's
great.
Yes, who directed me and Dolly there.
Yeah, he's
he'll
like the
be
last
awesome.
Of the old great summer stock places, too,
exactly.
Where you get the same experience that, just like you were a young person, because you said you were in the ensemble.
Yeah, I was in the ensemble.
Young people are doing the same thing, and because we often lament the fact that summer stock is gone, that the true original, you know, where stars would go out to the summer stock and you know, reach out to people. It's a little different now. But I think that Muni is really like one of the last that really still celebrates that tradition still.
And the audiences just love
it's
it.
It's an event for them. They have
it's
a picnic
a family event.
And
it's been passed on from generation to generation. And I just might add that my boyfriend, Adam Heller, is playing Herbie. What are you talking
about? I'm really glad
about?
That you inserted that.
I don't think they announced that yet, but that's he's playing Herbie.
Okay. We'll try to broadcast this before his show closes, but he's doing a letter to Harvey Milk.
He's fabulous.
And he's brilliant in it.
He's
such a brilliant performer.
I know.
How did you two meet, if you don't mind asking?
We did a show called Dancing in the Dark, which was supposed to come into...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, added to the list.
Yeah.
It was right after... based on the movie The Bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Nanette Fabre.
Is that the one that Andre DeShields was in?
No.
No, I'm thinking of something else.
No.
Cut that.
I know. No.
What am I thinking of? That other dance show that they were doing.
But I don't know. Oh, you're thinking Gotta Dance? Halftime? Yeah. No?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
That's had like 90 titles. Yeah. Sorry.
No worries. No, I'm like, oh, then what happened? No.
Have a good night, Beth. So anyway... So you guys met doing that.
We did. Yeah.
He's a genius. He really is.
I know.
Yeah.
I like that. That's nice. You'll have a nice summer.
Will this be the first time the two of you are working on stage together?
Pretty much. We've done a couple of benefits, and he was, when I did Baby It's You, he stood by for Barry Pearl, and he went on one time.
Oh,
wow.
So it was like,
wild.
Well, you're on stage with me. Yeah. I have to work too hard. But yeah, I see you anyway. So we haven't had that many opportunities to do it. Mm. But boy, we will this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And
that's
so great. Sinking your teeth into Mama Rose, yes, that's exciting.
Right. Yes. It's like one of the greatest musicals, if not the greatest musical ever written.
When you
come on.
I mean, when you take on a role like that, do you look at other people who've done it in the past or do you consciously avoid?
I kind of consciously avoid, even with, but I may change that with this role because there's so many fantastic performances that have been filmed. Mm-hmm. So I may just want to see what. Not copy, because that would be terrible, unless it's really good and I'll steal it. But I just think it would be informing to me to see what's worked so well in this fabulous piece of music and story.
You know, when we talk about something like Drowsy Chaperone, and I kind of have a feeling Prom is going to be the same way, so I'll ask you, you know, these two shows, I especially The Prom, I feel, will outlive all of us, and will be performed for years and years and years and years.
Your mouth.
All I've heard is good things.
Well,
seriously,
it's still show business. But
I know.
It's very special, and I hope it does have what you're saying right there.
So we'll table The Prom, but I'll ask you about Drowsy. A lot of people are going to take on this role at some point. What advice do you have for them?
The role specifically?
Yeah.
It's interesting because I've seen several productions, either in high schools or something, and you can tell that they've looked at YouTube.
Yes.
So it's very bizarre to watch yourself being imitated on the stage.
They think that's how she's meant to be done.
Exactly. Right. So I would always love to tell people that are doing this role to find your own inner Beatrice Stockwell and to never play her drunk. Mm. Yeah. She's just drowsy, which is a huge difference.
Yes,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely.
A huge difference. And if you have a drunk on stage, it's not nearly as satisfying as someone who just sees the world a little drowsier.
Do you want to do more plays at some point?
Yeah, I do. We lament a lot of times as musical people that we don't have to wake up at 3 o'clock going,
is first
it there?
First thing you do when we're in a show.
First thing you
so
do
funny.
Is like, how is it?
Am I going to sing? 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, do the old.
Am I there? So to actually not have to do that in a play would be really thrilling. That said, I love to sing a story. I like when you get to the point where you can no longer speak and you have to sing it. Mm-hmm. I love that. That feels so fun and empowering. Mm-hmm. And it's so satisfying. And I think I would miss it if I only did plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would miss the orchestra. I would miss my musical scene partners happening.
Yeah.
But I would still like not to go like, woo, it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Let me ask you, if you had the opportunity to go back, you could talk to your younger self coming up to New York for the first time. What advice would you want to give them?
Don't be so afraid. Mm-hmm. Don't be so afraid. And have a little more self-confidence in your gift. Because there's no one like you. There's no one like me. We are singular artists, individuals. See what we can contribute.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to do that.
Is that the same advice you give to your students?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have a passion and you have a curiosity, I say, so go for this. Give it a try. What's the worst that can happen? You'll learn something about yourself. You'll learn something about yourself as an artist. And you won't no regrets. Like, I did try it. You know, it didn't work, but boy, what I learned from being in that acting, what I learned about myself as a singer, or you may become a big star and win a Tony Award. Mm.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
Thank you so much, Beth.
Thank you. This was so much fun today.
I know.
Thank you for...
Are we done? No.
I know.
Anything else you want to cover? I think we're done.
So happy.
This was great. Oh. This was fantastic. Yeah.
Please come see Prom.
Yes. We're going to push it.
We're going to push it like crazy.
Do it on the social media. And we're really excited about that.
Me too.
Really excited about it.
Yeah. Gives me the goosebumps.
Yeah. I like that.
And seriously, I have not heard anything negative about everything has been positive and effusive.
Oh, good.
And you know everybody. They want to find something to nip it. But no, everything has been so positive.
Yeah.
When does... do you know when Bandstand is going to hit theaters?
June 25th, 28th, something like that.
We'll promote that as well.
Bless you.
Yeah.
Thank you. How thrilling will that be?
Yeah.
To see Andy's work up there like that forever. Oh, God. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah. It was great to be in the room where it happened.
I see what you did there.
See what I did.
Okay. When do you leave for Missouri?
What time is it?
No, I'm kidding. How much more
rehearsal will you have?
Well, yeah. We're meeting this week just to go over book and stuff, Rob okay. and Adam and I, just yeah.
nice.
To get a little head start.
Yeah, that's nice. It's like 2 days. No, I'm kidding. Yes. But it feels like, I mean, it kind of is.
You know, like I'll go to, you know, off book. I'll have everything memorized so I can actually just jump into that work and explore and see what happens. I leave in July.
Okay.
Until then, I'm just, you know, girl, making a dollar.
Oh, good. Amen.
Good.
Amen to that. Amen.
And then
to that.
You're doing Charles's birthday party?
Yes.
Yeah, awesome.
And that's singing home.
That's going to be great.
Oh, man.
I know. And he's going to be there. I'm so thrilled to sing it for him again.
Oh, yeah. He's such a good guy.
I know.
He's such a good guy.
I know. Yeah. I know. This was really fun. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so thank much you. For your
so
time.
You're so welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
I feel like I have to sing.
Good day, Mr. Thomas.
Good day, Mr. Schneider.
Well, it has happened. We finally hit over 100 iTunes reviews, and we'd like to thank each and every person who took the time to do so.
Huzzah! Now, we want to climb those charts even faster, and that is where you lovely folks who have not yet rated us come in.
The process is very simple. On your podcast app, tap the search tab, enter our name, behind the curtain, Broadway's Living Legends, tap the search key, tap our beautiful logo, tap the reviews, tap write a review, then tap your way into our hearts.
Tap your troubles away. That's nice, Rob. Once you are there, you can rate us from 1 star to 5 stars. Think of 1 star as Hervé V... Rob, how do you say this name?
Hervé Villechel.
Oh, dear God. I walked right into that one. Think of 1 star as Hervé Villechel and Ema Sumac in Sideshow, and 5 stars as front row seats to the opening night of Gypsy.
Buddy, kiss me. Yeah, they kissed me for the first time.
I thought that was pretty good.
We want to get good reviews, Rob. We want to get good reviews.
Excuse me, Arthur Lawrence. Excuse me for trying to liven up our commercial ads a little bit.
8 minute long commercial.
It's an infomercial at this point. I'm going to be like that lady that sells you the copper pots.
Look at this. You can put 400 pounds of manure in it, and it slides right out. Then you can make an omelet.
You got another line, Kevin. I'm
waiting for you to say, plus you can leave your comment and let us know if you're liking what guests are like.
Plus
next.
You can leave a comment to let us know what you are liking, what you're not liking at this point, or what guests you'd like to hear next.
So head on over to iTunes and let us know what you think of our little show.
Speaking of little, I'll tell you a story about Charles Lawton later.
Thanks, guys.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.